everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 213, Lucky 13. We are talking today about two episodes of Angel. Surprise! So we're talking about Angel season 3, episode 1, Heartthrob, and season 3, episode 2, That Vision Thing. So my name is Caitlin. I am joined today by fellow superfan Natalie and newbies Adiana and Brittany. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
So before we jump into everything, just a reminder of how you guys can get in touch with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So before we jump into our episode discussion, we are going to start with, as usual, fun facts. So, Adiana, let's hear from you first.
Oh, no, I don't have one. And so I was hoping someone else would, and that would spark an idea. My fun fact then is going to be that hopefully everyone listening this week will like me because we're doing two Angel episodes. And so I shouldn't have anything to complain about that'll make people angry.
We got Adiana for her specialty. All right, and Brittany, how about you?
My fun fact is that I haven't been on this podcast in a few weeks, and I was really enjoying my vacation from it, and so I had 6 hours worth of rewatchable actual footage to catch up on, and I'd say I watched maybe a grand total of 3 hours. I watched the two Angel episodes, and then I pretty much skimmed the rest of it because I did not have enough time. And that's my own fault. But I was enjoying my nice little break, and it was wonderful. And I forgot how much Buffy is in Buffy, but I got through it. Oh my gosh.
We were supposed to get positive feedback this week, Brittany.
I haven't been able to talk about Buffy in 2 weeks, and so it was kind of, you know, it built up having to watch that much at once.
Were you a fan of the finale, or no?
I mean, no, because it's just like, you know, she's coming back, because why were there two more seasons? Unless it's like Ghost Buffy, which I don't know, I might actually be more into that than if Buffy became alive for like a weird, stupid reason. I'm hoping it's not a stupid reason, but I'm a little nervous.
I mean, she's dead. Whatever reason it is, it's going to be stupid.
I did enjoy the side character plots, though, more than I was anticipating. Like, I was actually like, oh, when Xander proposed. So, you know, there were some, like, little moments where I was brought back into the show. And, you know, watching Giles be tormented is obviously always great. So,
yeah, I was keen to see what you thought of him killing Ben.
Yeah, it was it wasn't Giles, like, you know, like, it didn't feel like I was watching Giles, but then, like, you know, he's dealing with a lot in that episode where he might have to kill Dawn, he has to watch Buffy die probably, and he knows that something could go wrong, and he has to go against everything that is like normal Giles self has told him not to do. And it was really interesting to watch him be that conflicted and see which actions he chose to take. So it was pretty good. I liked Spike, too. You know, being part of the gang, I felt like he was fully indoctrinated into the gang. So,
yeah.
I was definitely not a fan of the finale. And I felt, mostly because I felt like it was emotional manipulation on Joss Whedon's part that kind of came, like, I felt like it was not earned because it made no, like, the plot made no sense to me, and therefore I did not feel emotionally invested, also because I knew she was going to come back. Like, it made no sense to me that Dawn, that Buffy could be exchanged for Dawn, because even though Buffy dies, Dawn's blood did not stop. So that made no sense to me, and so I did not like it. But anyway. This is a new episode, and I'm supposed to be a cheery person. So
I was gonna say, I'm sorry I brought us back to this dark place, and please start liking Ariana again now.
You're both killing me. You're killing me.
You only have to get through two more seasons with us.
I genuinely can't remember if at the time when this aired, I cannot remember if they knew what if the audience knew if the show was coming back, if they thought it was the end, if you know what I mean. I don't think they did, but I can't remember.
I think it was being billed as a series finale at the time.
Yeah.
It was moving network. It moved networks.
Is this?
And so,
yeah.
It moved networks. It went to UPN from the WB, and so they were saying it was a series finale.
Well, if you don't
even as a series finale, it doesn't work. But anyway, whatever. I'm not talking. They already talked about it last week, so.
Yes. All good. All good.
Natalie, what's your fun fact?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sick and in pain, and my throat's very sore, and Ariana has suggested that I say the things that I want to say through a Stephen Hawking voice reciter. We found one online, but it does say every time you type something, this is a demo, before saying your sentence, which could get annoying really fast. But perhaps an amusing option to try for later if I get too tired. So that's my fun fact today.
So if you don't hear a lot of Natalie, that's why.
Yeah. My fun fact
She's really
is
taking
also,
one for the team here.
My fun fact, it's fine. My fun fact is also that if you don't like the logic of the character dying and the show coming back the next season, don't watch Supernatural. just don't. I mean, I know you won't.
No, it's not that she died.
Don't do it.
That's not what makes me angry, that she died. It's how she died, because it feels like a cop-out on Joss Whedon's part, but whatever.
I'm sorry.
Well, my fun fact... is that we are recording on the 12th and my birthday is the 14th. So I'm getting old.
Happy birthday!
Yay!
We're going to be recording Once-a-Bowl on my birthday.
the end of an era, man. Once this Once Upon a Time finale happens, the show will literally
are you guys going
never
on?
Be the same.
Are you guys going to keep doing Once-a-Bowl? Next year?
It remains to be seen. Now that there's only, like, three original cast members coming back, I don't know if I can handle it. One of them is Rumpelstiltskin, and that's my least favorite person. So I don't know.
It's quite strange.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'll be...
But it might be good again with a reset.
Just seems hard without the main character coming back.
Yeah, and I was hoping like the
I couldn't stand her from the beginning, so.
Well, I was hoping that when it was going to reset, and totally wrong podcast to be talking about this on, but I was hoping it would be focused on like Henry's story, but Jared Gilmore's not coming back, so.
How old is that kid now? Is he like a teen or is he still a child?
No, he's like a young adult. Like he's
okay.
Yeah, he's very old.
Old child.
And by old, I mean he's like probably like 17.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yep. So, I'm getting old. Once Upon a Time is clearly getting old. And we're going to talk about an old show. Mm-hmm. There we go.
And an old guy and an old show.
That's true. So, just why we're doing two Angel episodes instead of a Buffy and Angel is that these two episodes of Angel aired before Buffy season 6 premiered. So we're going to do these two episodes of Angel since they aired first, and then we'll do season 6 episodes 1 and 2 of Buffy next week, and then we'll be back on with one of each after that. But that's just the reasoning to throw it out there.
Yeah, so, it's interesting that they aired those two episodes first, that they aired these Angel episodes like this, basically, and then I guess they wanted to, like, give the Buffy return a bit of a linger, especially have some time for Angel to believe that Buffy is dead forever, you know, because the show's coming back, she won't be dead forever, so.
I think it adds a little gravitas to these episodes, and I think it helps these episodes that he thinks she's dead, if we know she's not.
I mean, she is dead at this time in the...
She is dead.
She's dead and in the ground.
She's very much dead right now, but, you know, Buffy will continue.
And in whatever form that takes place, we'll find out next week. All right, so Angel, episode 301. We are in season 3, guys. Heartthrob. So our synopsis from Mitch this week. In this episode, Angel kills an old comrade, leading a widower on a warpath for Angel investigations. In his Angelus days, our protag ran with Elizabeth and James. Recognizing Elizabeth's locket post-staking, Cordy helps Angel prepare for James's incoming wrath. James has his heart removed, giving him temporary invincibility. In a final subway fight, Angel both bests that heartless vamp but comes to terms with Buffy's death. Meanwhile, Darla is Prego's AF. Yes.
That was the worst pregnancy belly ever. She did not look pregnant.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, am I supposed to think that, is she? And then I, like, looked up the transcript, and I'm like, yep, no, that's happening. That's a thing that we're actually going to be dealing with.
This is before Breaking Dawn, just throwing it out there.
Yeah, way before.
I'm so excited for Angel's demon baby.
Didn't you say you wanted him to have a demon baby?
No, I said what? I wanted him to have a real baby with Cordelia, and that's how he loses his soul, is looking down at his baby for the first time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oh my god, that would be so great.
Careful what you wish for.
All right, so we returned to Angel, and it's been 3 months. So we ended season 2 with everyone coming back from Pylea. Sorry, Mitch, we're not spending the whole season in Pylea. And Willow is sitting in the hotel, and she has a very sad look on her face, and Angel realizes what this obviously means. So we don't see any of the aftermath or her explaining what happened. We pick up 3 months, and Angel has gone on a spiritual retreat to deal with the fact the love of his life is dead. So, was that a little overdramatic, guys, or are you okay with it?
I mean, he didn't cut out his heart, so.
He went to find himself. I guess that's fine. I'm glad we didn't have, like, to deal with those 3 months. And we kind of get him coming back after that. So I don't really care what he did during that time. And it turns out whatever he was doing wasn't useful anyway, because they turned out to be demons. So, like, poor guy can't catch a break. Should have just gone to Vegas.
That's what God was saying.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a nice summer vacation was well earned. It looked like his team had the stuff covered. So it's not like he left them again. I'm really glad Angel didn't go dark like last season. He learned his lesson. I liked that he came back okay. Like, even though he wasn't okay that he was okay, I liked that he was okay. It feels like he's had a lot of growth since last year.
I really noticed, like, when he comes through the door, like, he smiles. We see him smile.
So much.
Yeah. Quite a bit in this episode. Like, he smiles. He smiles at Cordy. He smiles at Fred. Like, there's quite a bit of smiling Angel, which...
And he's, like, funny. Like, he comes back with the jokes. He's like Cordelia's like, you got a gift? And he hands her the skull. Like, totally deadpan.
He's kind of peaceful. I don't know. Maybe he got the full story of what happened And he was like, she did the right thing and was kind of at peace with it. Like, because, like, taking into consideration, like, Dawn and all of that, like, given that it's altered everyone who ever knew her, Angel would have known Dawn forever. And if he heard the story from Dawn, you know, if he went to Sunnydale to see her grave, if he talked to Willow or talked to Dawn about what happened, he may have actually, like, been quite peaceful about what happened once, aside from the grief of her not existing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, she went out a hero, she saved the world. Like, he does really seem, like you said, Natalie, kind of at peace with it. What I kind of noticed is, I don't know if this was me reading into it, I kind of felt like Cordy felt a little bit more guilt into it. Like, the way that, like, when they were sitting down on the stairs and she was talking about how, you know, it's okay to feel bad. She was the love of your life. She died. You weren't there. You didn't get to help. You didn't get to see it happen. And I mean, the reason she didn't get to, he wasn't there is because he was in Pylea trying to save Cordelia. That's why none of them were there. So I don't know. In that scene, I kind of got the sense like she was maybe trying to suppress some of her own guilt or trying to express something there too.
I don't know, I felt like maybe she was sort of not testing him, but like, yeah, definitely was like she was expecting something different from him, like that she was expecting him to be more like James, you know, like the mirror character, and the fact that he's not, she's like, wow, what is going on here? What does this mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, and we can talk about the conversation at the end of the episode in a bit. Mm-hmm. But so Angel comes back and he's kind of zen, which is nice. And immediately we find out that Fred has really not come out of her room in 3 months. She's been chowing down on tacos, but she's really not coming out of her room.
I mean, I kind of feel like she's living life to the fullest.
Yeah, Fred is living my dream life. Just hiding away in her room, writing, and getting tacos delivered to her. What more does anyone want? Plus, Angel, like, comes to visit her. I mean, you really can't beat that.
I really want to give props to Amy Acker, who is so terrific. I feel like she comes off as such a weirdo and yet is somehow endearing at the same time. Like, she's so crazy. And yet I also want to give her a hug. So.
Yeah, she was clearly a quirky person before she went over to Pylea. Yeah. But then she has 5 years of trauma, like, dialing up her quirkiness to, like, a 37 on a scale of 1 to 10. So, yeah, she's kind of adorable, though. And Angel, after he gives everyone their presents, which is adorable that he thought to bring everyone presents.
Yeah.
Because he's like the dad bringing everyone presents from his work.
Yes.
But he goes up and sees her, and it's really sweet, and he's supportive, and he's really the person that she's, like, attached to because he saved her. So she's really attached herself to him, and Angel recognizes it, but he's also trying to get her to take a few steps out of her room, which backfires later in the episode when she actually does. But she's going to take baby steps. But are we enjoying Angel and Fred so far, newbies?
I mean, I love Amy Acker, so she can be on the screen all the time and never get on my nerves. If I can survive watching her play Root on Person of Interest, I can watch her do anything, because that character, that'll test your patience. And I know that I'm known on this podcast for not having any patience with any character ever who are supposed to be likable, but I do. I find Fred, like Adiana was saying, very endearing, and I do like her a lot.
So we found the right mix for Brittany.
Yes, and it's only because I had, like, a couple of seasons of another show of her playing an oddball to get used to it. So thank you, Person of Interest, for allowing me to bring that good vibe here.
We kind of jump back into things because Cordelia has a vision. A gang of vampires have killed a bunch of college kids and taken a couple hostage. So the team goes after them and does what they do best, except when Angel stakes their pretty blonde leader. She knew him. Turns out she was someone that Angelus and Darla ran with for a little bit of time back in the day. So were we surprised to meet more followers of Angelus? Brittany, were you happy?
I mean, I was watching Caitlin live tweet these episodes while I was dreading watching 6 hours worth of content. And she mentioned Angelus and I got really excited. And then she told me it was a flashback. So, I mean, I'm always down for people who hung out with Angelus in the old days so I can get some more stories. But I just can't stand the flashbacks much more.
Really?
I'm not a fan of the flashbacks.
Yeah,
although he's really funny, Angelus is hilarious.
Yeah. I did enjoy these characters, though. I liked I think, Natalie, you were saying this earlier, how, you know, we're supposed to have James be what we'd expect Angel to be going through.
Yeah.
And so I did like that in this episode and instead of bringing, like, you know, a new demon that we have to learn a ton about, it's really the only introduction we need is the fact that he knew Angelus way back when. So it wasn't, you didn't have to do a lot of legwork in the first episode back from, you know, him learning about Buffy's death. So I did like that element of it, even if I'm not a huge, huge fan of the flashbacks. I think it worked really well for this premiere.
Can I also just give a very quick shout out to, oh my God, David Greenwald, who wrote and directed this episode again. Like, so I can, he's the kind of...
Oh my gosh. That's why I loved it.
Showrunner for Angel, you know, Josh is in name. It's really David Greenwald in spirit. But oh my God, can I say how much I love the little things that he puts in that, like, shows you who is a freaking douchebag and who, like, especially men. Like, the scene when they're in the car with the couple and, you know, they're being threatened, like, the actual hostages. And the dude right before he gets killed, right before they get killed, he's like, no, you know, take her, as in, like, save me, you know, kill her. And then they don't die, and now those people have to live with that. And I just love that so much because, like, I love that, it shows people being disgusting and kind of points a passive-aggressive finger at them, especially men. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yes, that was a nice touch.
Anyway, just a side thing.
That makes a lot of sense that you said that, because I found, like, it was hard for me to pick a line. I still haven't picked my favorite line. But there are so many, like, little moments that aren't, like, throwaway lines.
Mm-hmm.
That aren't memorable lines, but that are so character-specific. Like, the little things that happened here, like, even... like that scene right on the stairs when Cordelia's like staring at him and he's like, what? And she's like, what? And they have that like little back and forth where neither one is really saying anything, but they're like pushing to get the other person to say something.
It felt like the priorities of the show were being very vocal. Like, they were very vocal about showing this show's priorities and the relationships and everything. And I think that's David again. Yeah.
Speaking of relationships, part of the thing the flashback does is, I mean, obviously we're supposed to draw the parallels in the present day between James and Angel, who have both lost the loves of their lives. But in the flashback, we also see that James is really, like, I guess kind of the second soulless vampire we've seen, like, in love. Spike was in love, and now James, like, was very clearly in love with Elizabeth, but we see, like, their obsessive lovey-doveyness, and then you get the total contrast with Angelus and Darla, which is clearly just, like, a obsessive lust thing going on between them, but, like, Angelus's disdain for love was so hilarious because they're just going like, it'd take me 1,000 years to describe the color of your eyes. He's like, they're green. Done. So it's just cracking me up. But so James is so startled to find out that Angel ever fell in love with anybody in the present times. And we kind of see the tie back to that as Angelus, he was very clearly never like in love with anyone, which again goes back to the fact that he could sleep with Darla and not lose his soul because he never really did love her. They had something else, something messy and twisted, but it was never love.
I loved a good barn burning.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. Even in those scenes, to me, I think that they're in love, but their love is different. Like, the way they show their love is different. Like, I think when Darla left him, in some weird way, that kind of made him love her more because she's so evil. Like they're in love with the evilness and twistedness of each other. So I don't know. I don't want to say that he was never in love with her because I feel like he's very attached to her.
I think he's attached. I would never describe what they have as love personally. It reads like obsession to me.
Well, all of these are obsession.
I believe
if you have no soul, can you love?
Yeah, because I think that's the same argument we get into with Spike a lot. Like, is he in love or is it some strain of obsession? Because he doesn't know what love, like, is, I guess, in a sense. So when we've been talking about Spike, like, yes, he's obsessed with Buffy, but is he in love with her? Yes, he was obsessed with Drusilla, but was he in love with her? And we pointed to the fact that, yes, he was in love with Drusilla, but is he in love with Buffy? I want to say yes, but we were talking, early on when all of this stuff was starting, like, where is he just obsessed with her? And where does that line go?
Again, I think it's the amount of personhood that they retain. Like, Angel and Darla both really didn't, maybe they didn't have that strong a personality as a human or anything like that, because they really didn't retain much of, like, any of their mind or heart. Whereas Spike and perhaps James and stuff like that, these people retained their minds and their hearts. It's just that their soullessness means that they process the feelings that come up from that differently, if you know what I mean. Like, so I think that it is love, but it's like being colored with a different dye or something, because they don't act on it in the way that a person with a soul would act on it. Like, they don't see why something is right or wrong about it, or they whatever. Whereas Angel and Darla are just more sort of sociopathic. Like, it's kind of, it seems to be like a thing of convenience and respect and obsession and even family, but it doesn't seem to come from the same place.
It's all very weird and complicated. But yes, so also in the flashback, we're introduced to someone who has been mentioned before, but I don't think we got to see until now, and that is Holtz, who is some kind of vampire hunter, and he is after Angel, and he's the guy who was burned down the barn from that we heard about during the trial episode in season 2.
I wonder if we're gonna see him again, maybe this season.
I mean, everyone was very interested in the story and what happened.
Yeah,
and
he's probably gonna come back as like a vampire now or something.
Hashtag no comment. But his name sure got thrown around a lot.
Yeah. Maybe he'll be like the Vampire Diaries. Like, in the Vampire Diaries, they have that vampire hunter girl who, like, she keeps regenerating. She has like 10 lives and she dies and she comes back. Maybe he's like that.
We'll see. I don't know. But that was the thing that happened. Just going to throw that out there, that was a thing. So we have James, when he finds out that Angel was the one who killed Elizabeth. He goes and has this cure done where he gets his heart cut out, and that gives him apparently like 6 hours, which gets cut off in their cell phone conversation, but it gives him like invulnerability for a very short period of time. And James is willing to go on a kamikaze mission for revenge because his girlfriend died. So he goes and stalks Angel and Cordelia because they're the ones at the hotel. Poor Fred comes out and she's all proud of herself for taking a baby step. And then he has to yell at her to go hide in her room till he tells her to come out.
Yeah.
So that was just a amusing moment of bad timing. But yeah, and Angel also tries to get Cordelia to leave because they have figured out that James is coming. And Cordelia's not going anywhere. And I know Ariana and Brittany will have things to say about Cordelia.
It was really hard for me not to just write for my favorite scene for both episodes, everything with Cordy and Angel. Because
yes,
I'm like finally feeling like, okay, we're getting to a show that understands me now and what exactly what I want. And they're playing into my hand. Like, here, you wanted this to happen? We're going to lay on the subtext so thick for you in these two episodes. And I was like, thank you, gods, for giving me this gift.
What I really enjoyed about this episode is that for me, it felt like for the first time, like Angel and Cordelia felt like equals to me. Like, I don't know, in the way they talked to each other, they were talking to each other as equals. Like, and I thought that was really cool. She doesn't seem as young as she used to.
I think that's very true.
Yeah, so Cordelia has no intention of leaving Angel behind. And so they go through running through the sewers and end up on a subway. And then we get a subway fight, which, you know, I always think back to the Spike fight on the subway with the Slayer that
killed. Oh, it was so the same. Yeah, it was like the same. It had to have been like, we've got that subway car. We're going to reuse that. Yeah.
But in this fight, it comes out that Angel fell in love with somebody and she's dead. And James is very startled. But James disintegrates while Angel is left. The problem is that James really gets under his skin, kind of saying, you know, if you really loved her, you would have done the same thing that I did. And, you know, he's basically saying, if you aren't willing to cut out your heart and die, then you were never really in love. And this clearly bothers Angel. And we get, when they get back to the hotel, we have the second conversation between Cordy and Angel, where Angel's not really saying a lot, but he reveals that, you know, he's okay, which we've kind of noticed through the episode, but it bothers him that he is, that in some way he is betraying Buffy's memory by not being so destroyed about it that he'd be willing to go step in the sunlight or whatever. And Cordelia tells him, which is just this wonderful scene, that, you know, he's honoring her by continuing to live on and to save people and to fight the good fight. That's what she would have wanted him to do. And it kind of goes back to the speech that Buffy gives Dawn before she jumps off the tower, when she says, you know, living is the hardest thing, which I feel like is kind of tying back into this. It's her death is kind of messing with everyone who's left behind. And Angel has had 3 months to process and has come to terms with it. And he's kind of okay. And it's weird to him that he's okay, but he's going to keep going on and honoring her memory by fighting the good fight.
Plus, I think he realizes that Buffy is that much stronger than him, which, you know, is killing me to say. But, you know, he watched her kill him in order to save the world. So he knows the lengths that she is willing to go in order to do what she needs to do. And she did it. She did it again and again, even though she knows the pain that it's going to cause and she knows the people it's going to hurt. But she is consciously making that decision. And I think that helps him be okay, even if he isn't able to say that or realize that. I think subconsciously he knows why he's okay, which is good. I'm happy he's okay, because I wouldn't want to watch him be like James, because I think we don't need that.
I also was really glad that he was okay, because I think also part of his like feeling like he should feel worse probably comes from, he's like, shouldn't I feel worse? Like, someone with a soul should feel worse, right? But, I think that the fact that he's okay, that's really, like, his humanity showing. Because we talked about in the episode when Joyce died, about how, like, strong humans are and resilient and being able to move forward. And I feel like this is him being really resilient and being like, you know, this terrible thing happened, but there's still, like, tomorrow I still have to wake up. So I feel like it's showing a good part of him that he is able to, like, honor her and remember her, but still move forward.
I think it makes a difference that it's just been 3 months. He spent that time kind of working through it. So there's a very good chance he was pretty wrecked for a while, and we just never saw it. So we're seeing him coming out of all those stages of grief, and he's kind of hit acceptance.
Yeah, and I think that's what's healthy, right?
And I'm sure, kind of like Brittany was hinting at, that it helps that Buffy, like, made the choice to sacrifice herself. It wasn't something where she was murdered or something, or she lost the fight. She saved the world by making the choice to sacrifice herself to some degree too.
I just have so many feelings about that, like, coping, like, not even coping, but the, like, discovery that you, like, don't feel as bad, that things are livable with after you make such a big drama, you know, about it. And I just think, again, like, it's really showing the motivations of the show. Like, I don't necessarily want to be like, oh, you know, it's showing that he doesn't care about her less or anything like that. But it's definitely showing, like, the way that this show, more so than Buffy, and more so than a lot of shows that I watch, the way that this show, like, wants its characters to be healthy, and it wants, like, good portrayals of love and of friendship, and it shows, like, what is actually, like, a healthy way to be and how to sort of cope with that. And so I really enjoy that, especially, like, you know, for a character that was so, like, tied up in melodrama in, like, the tone of another show. So I don't know. I think it says a ton.
Yeah. I think in that one, like you said, Caitlin, that one smile, like, when he first walks in, I feel like that says so much, because obviously he was hurting for 3 months, and then, you know, Cordelia opens the door and screams, and like, he sees all of his friends, and it's like, you know, even when you lose someone that you love a lot, there's always more people. You can always make a new family. And it was like, he was coming out like, these are my people now. I still have them. I need to be here for them. And that was just so beautiful. And he brought them presents.
Yeah, and it shows the growth in his character, because we saw him the last time something was about to happen and he thought that pulling away made sense. And it still does make sense for Angel to pull away, but he knows that going back is better. It's not like he's closing himself off. He chose to, like, go away with the intention of coming back. And he went away, he did his thing, and he came back, and they knew that it was, you know, not going to be forever. So it was just very nice to see that happen. And like Caitlin was saying, like, we know that it was 3 months. So, like, there was probably that period of time where he was probably losing it, but we didn't have to see that, because we had that separation of it being like, okay, this is 3 months later. We know that time has passed.
But it tells us a lot that that his friends trusted him and his growth enough to think that if he's going to leave, he will come back. So it's clear that he's fully integrated back into the group and that they fully trust him again. No one's sitting going, do you think he's ever going to come back? Do you think he killed himself kind of thing? They're just like, whenever he comes back, he'll come back when he's ready kind of thing, which is a big change from the last time he pulled away.
Must have been sending postcards.
Yeah, and I just feel like I would like to know what was said, like, before he left off. Like, that he wasn't, like, going on a wild, breaking down buildings or, like, whatever. Like, he wasn't going crazy with that. I'd like to know what was actually said, between Willow or the friends at Angel Investigations about, like, whether he, if it's just, like, literally he'd already come to terms with it, like it was something that they were just accepting and he was just going to ruminate on that, or whether he was more angry, at the start or more volatile. Because, yeah, they were very calm about it, very peaceful about it, so I don't know.
Maybe there's a comic.
The answer to everything.
What happened to Zuko's mother? What happened when Angel found out Buffy died? Everything's there. All right. And our last big reveal in this episode is the return of Darla. And she's Preggers. How did that happen, guys?
The powers that be. This is going to be the child that, like, starts the apocalypse or something.
Because, like Giles was saying, we've only dealt with 6 apocalypses, but it feels like so many. But this is the big one, right? This could be the one.
Right, isn't Angel, like, the answer? That's what they keep saying, right? Yeah, like, he's going to stop the apocalypse or start it or whatever. That's his demon baby.
He's heavily involved in some way.
That's why Angel's, they keep trying to shut him down.
Angel's the father to the Antichrist.
Oh, God.
So I'm just curious what the newbies' reactions were the moment you realized that Darla was pregnant.
It was so, after such a fantastic episode, I was like, why are you doing this to me? I hate, pregnancy plot lines where it's like, oh, we slept together that one time and we're totally pregnant now, but it's only been 3 months and a couple weeks, I guess. I don't know. Gosh, so annoying. I'm not excited about it because as most of you know, I don't like Darla, so that already is not helping the situation. But I think there's no good reason for it to be a thing. Like, it's just not going to be no matter what that baby is supposed to do or be or indicate, I'm not going to be happy with it. So I'm not looking forward to any more of the reveal. And we'll talk a little bit more about it next episode because some more information is revealed.
I was just like, that girl is so obviously not pregnant. Like, that is the worst pregnancy belly ever. It's just like one giant bump. Like, no, she's exactly the same size, just with a giant bump. Not wider in any way. That's what I thought, mostly.
It's not that she's a vampire or anything. It's just clearly fake pregnancy belly.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was thinking.
Maybe that's how vampires show when they're pregnant.
That's true. We have no, context.
All right.
I don't really care how it happened. It's going to happen. Whatever.
This is
hopefully Angel
happening.
Loses his soul when he looks upon his baby. Eyes,
yeah.
On the Antichrist. All right, let's move along from the Breaking Dawn precursor into favorite scenes and favorite lines. My favorite scene in this episode was Cordelia telling Angel that he's honoring Buffy by continuing to live. I thought that was a really sweet and mature conversation, and I just think Cordelia is such a good friend for Angel, and I love the two of them. Natalie, your favorite scene?
Oh, mine was the gift giving. I mean, it wasn't. I really loved the conversations they had later as well, the stairs. But the gift giving, when she first sees him and they hug and then she, like, wheedles for the presents. The fact that she can wheedle for the presents, you know, on a grief trip shows that they know he was kind of okay, you know. And, yeah, the joke with the skull and what he brought everyone and how everyone's so touched, like, I don't know, these people just are so intensely involved and care about each other in a way that, again, like, sorry, Scoobies, but I don't vibe. Like, the Scoobies feel sometimes more like, I don't know, maybe it's like they're too close, that they're like they already know everything about each other, or maybe that it's just a different tone. But what I see with these guys is more like what I recognize about friendship in real life, and like the way that people actually know each other and actually react to each other, like, naturalistically, when they are, like, when they do really prioritize friendship, and I don't know, I just love it.
The Scoobies remind me of, like, toxic friendships I've had. Like, that's how
it's kind of like, you know, like that group of people that you like hang around with because you have to, and then not have to, but like
they're there, just, like in high school.
Yeah, like it's just what happens.
And then you can't leave because who else would you go with? They're like, that's, you've been with them so long.
That's why there's a Sunnydale campus.
All right, Adriana, your favorite scene.
Mine was, I don't know if they were they in the sewers? Whatever. Yeah. When they were, okay. So when they were running from the thing in the sewers and they were bickering like an old married couple, I just thought it was so funny that, like, they were both so done with each other and, like, being nice. And he was so frustrated with her. He was like, go. And she was frustrated with him. And I just thought it was so funny. And I love them.
And they were having phone trouble.
Yes. And my actual favorite line, which is Caitlin's favorite line, happened in that scene.
So good. And Brittany, your favorite scene?
Mine was just getting more Fred time. So specifically when Angel went up to see her after he got back, I thought that just really getting a sense of, like, where she's at when we're kicking off season 3 and seeing, you know, what happened, like, over those 3 months, and just kind of getting a glimpse into where she needs to come from and maybe where, get a little bit of where she's going, how long it's going to take. I really just, I'm excited that Fred is becoming a part of the series.
Aw, Fred. All right, and let's move on to favorite lines. So my favorite line, as well as Ariana's, because it made me think of the podcast, was when they're trying to figure out how James is immortal. Cordelia is talking about the Ring of Amara, and she says, did the Amara people make cufflinks or belt buckles? And Angel goes, there was only one. And Cordelia goes, and you had to smash it. We just keep talking on the podcast about, gee, his life would be so much easier if he'd kept it.
Yes. And I think about that all the time.
So good. So funny. So I just love that Cordelia's calling him out on something that we've been calling him out on for a while now.
Yeah, I did want that one, to be honest. That was the first one I wrote down because it's just so good.
So funny. Okay. And which one did you end up with, Natalie?
I ended up going with, like, the speech, like, interacting with James on the train when, you know, he's doing his crazy thing. And he says, is this your idea of love, James? It's not real unless it kills you, which is just so interesting to hear Angel say, because, like, that's, like, so the ethos of, like, all the great loves on Buffy, like, her and, you know, her drama, and it's the whole reason why Riley didn't work for her, you know, like she wasn't able to settle into that kind of like actual healthy, comfortable love, whereas everything about Angel is the opposite of that. Like everything about Angel is the slow realization of that kind of healthy, comfortable love being the most beautiful. I had a very troubled teenhood, you know, looking at stuff like Spike's drama as like the ideal, like that's real love, that's real intense love and truth and what one should be aiming for. And then like the, you know, the point of getting to like, no, like the way people treat each other on Angel is the most beautiful and ideal thing to aim for in terms of all sorts of relationships. And so, yeah.
You should strive. Your ideal love should be someone who goes and buys you art supplies when you're sad.
All right. And Ariana, your favorite line?
My favorite line was when Cordelia goes and sits down with him on the stairs and just goes, this is going to be one of those talks where I do all the talking, isn't it? And I just love in this episode the level of comfort that they have each other, like in the sewers, how when they're fighting, I love that they're so comfortable they don't have to be nice to each other anymore, but they also aren't mean, which is how I feel like sometimes with the Scoobies, sometimes I feel like they're too mean to each other. But I just love that these two know each other so well now that he knows she wants to talk, so he lets her talk. She knows he doesn't, so she does all the talking. Yeah.
And they kind of, they're like starting to bridge a gap that they know it's there, but, you know, recognizing not quite there yet, but kind of being like here when you're ready to talk yeah. about it kind of thing. Like it's a very mature, it's a good dynamic.
Yeah.
And Brittany, your favorite line?
Mine was right from the beginning when Angel like realizes that the monks are demons and he's like, demon monks should have gone to Vegas.
And then he comes home and Gunn's like, Vegas.
Yeah.
Maybe one day. One day.
All right. So moving on to episode 302, That Vision Thing, where we get more Angel and Cordelia, which I'm sure, Ariana has lots to say about.
Oh, so much.
But first, our synopsis. In this episode, Cordy's visions are taking a physical toll on her body, and her husband is not about to let that slide. Thank you, Mitch. Lila is using Harold and Kumar Star Kalpen's big brain to manipulate Cordy.
Harold and Kumar Star Kalpen? Was this Mitchell?
This is yes. Mitch.
I assume Mitch has never watched House.
I guess not.
No, I feel like that Cal Penn, I feel like, is never... That's always going to be his biggest thing.
Yeah. Really?
And Kumar.
Absolutely.
Oh, not for me. Yeah. It would never be my go-to, but that's okay. Anyway, carry on. Sorry.
Lila is using Cal Penn's big brain to manipulate Cordy's visions to have physically damaging effects. Lila has Angel free a man from a hell dimension in order to free Cordy of the torment. However, Angel throws a rebar through the brain man for good measure and tells Lila to never, ever mess with Bay again.
Mm-hmm.
We have an episode where at first it seems like Cordelia's visions from the powers that be are starting to take an even worse toll on her. We start seeing she has a vision of a monster with claws, and then she has claw marks on her body, but she doesn't tell anyone. Did you guys initially think these were her regular visions, just stepping up a notch with how bad they were?
I feel like it was a good like psych out, because they've been talking more and more about how her visions are getting worse, so it seemed like a natural progression.
Yeah, same with me. I thought that, like, oh, okay, like, this is going to be a slow build, especially when she hid the scratches. It seemed,
yeah,
it seemed like she had been doing that, you know, like, with other, like, scars or instances where, like, you know, something appears when she has a vision and she's just not telling anyone. So it felt, like Ariana was saying, it felt very natural to watch her like, reveal that she had those scars. Also a little creepy that Dennis is, like, you know, hanging around helping her with her bath. I was like, okay.
Yeah,
I thought it was creepy. Maybe. I thought it was endearing, but...
I mean...
I don't know, maybe...
Maybe if he wasn't physically in the bathtub room, like, when she took off her shirt, I'd feel a little bit better.
Maybe she's just not bothered because he's a ghost.
Yeah, and I guess it's that's like, true.
I don't know if he doesn't... He's not getting a boner over it or anything. He's a ghost.
He's so nice.
He's so sweet.
He helps her out. I know.
He adjusts the lights and draws the bath and picks up her clothes. Ugh, he's such a good roommate. I love Phantom Dennis. He's my favorite character we never see. He's adorable. But kind of sticky on this, like, we know now that it was the brain guy who was sending these visions that were hurting Cordelia to get to Angel, because Lila needed Angel. Do the newbies think that we will see something similar from her visions from the powers that be, if things continue the way they are? Like, her real ones?
That's a good question. And I think something that could happen. I think the powers that be are so mysterious at this point. So if something were to materialize, I wouldn't be surprised, because we don't know that much about them, and they sort of only come up when it's, I guess, not convenient to the plot, but just like when we really need them to explain something or make something happen, then. You know, there's a lot of room for a like the roles that they can or cannot play in this world. So I don't know. I would like to get the powers that be involved a little bit more, just because we still, like, don't know what's going on with Angel at this point either, with what role he's playing with this scroll and bringing about the apocalypse. I feel like we're, like, tiptoeing around that with Wolfram and Hart, and I'd like to get some clarity, and maybe the powers that be through Cordelia could help us get there.
Wolfram and Hart make zero sense. I do not understand what's happening, because last year everyone was like, no, you can't kill Angel, like, because he's, like, the key to the apocalypse. And this year they're, like, back to bothering Angel again for no reason. Like, what is with these, like, asbestos warnings? Like, what's happening? It makes no sense.
Apparently, he has a long game that he's trying to play. He's like, I'm going to get him so many fines and court appearances, and then he won't be able to go because he can't go out in daylight.
I love that Angel cares as much about this as me. Like, he's like, gee, 57? Is that a lot?
I mean, I don't even mind, because it's Daniel Day Kim.
Mm-hmm.
And like me some Daniel Day Kim. So he can talk about asbestos as much as he wants, and I'll be okay. All right, so we've got these visions. At first, Cordelia's got the scratches on her, but she sends the team to find the coin, right? The coin was the first one. It was the coin first. And they go to Chinatown and meet Kung Fu Grandma and Grandpa and have to knock them out and steal the coin for we don't know what. Just the vision tells Cordelia that they have to find this coin. So they do that. And then Cordelia has another vision and gets these awful boils on her. And oh my God, this poor girl. These boils.
I know.
I love that it affected her voice, because it meant that it was, yeah, like in the inner flesh of her body as well, which is disgusting. But I love that they acted that in, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it was clearly really wrecking her.
Yeah.
And I love, like, the brave, like, you know, Cordelia was such a, you know, in Buffy early seasons of Angel, she's such a, like, you know, obsessed with her image and the way she looks. And now she's sort of just like, oh, well, these things are happening to me, but, like, this is my role in the group and there's kind of really nothing I can do. So I'm going to keep calm and I'm not going to freak out about it. We're going to figure a way to get through this and make it go away. And she's not, like, you know, freaking out that she has these claw marks all over her body, or freaking out that, you know, like, you know, the boils are so gross. Like, I would, if
yes,
if
they're very happened, gross.
If this happened to Cordelia, the Cordelia we knew in early Buffy, can you, like, even imagine the reaction?
Oh,
I don't
God.
Even remember that Cordelia anymore. Yeah, like, remnants of her still exist, but not in the way that she was on that show. Like, it's so great to see Cordelia in this place of, you know, being the person who things can happen to and have her react when appropriate for the moment. So, like, sure, there are some times that she can freak out and, you know, still complain that, oh my God, I have a zit or something like that, and we would be okay with it. But then to see her like this and not have that reaction, it's even better.
And you could tell that she was very scared, but it wasn't coming from, like, a place of vanity.
Yes.
Because it was genuinely terrifying.
Cool. Exactly.
That she's, like, this sickness is, like, eating her body.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And she also has this concern that it's, you know, am I a bad person? Do these things keep happening to me because I was a bad person?
Yeah.
And she keeps expressing that, and Angel has to be like, obviously not.
Oh,
just, ugh. But, ugh. Poor Cordy. I need to stop seeing Cordelia abused by her visions.
When she said, unclean, like, when she was talking about it and she was like, oh, it's gross, and then she was like, unclean, as in, like, it felt like more than, like, a physical unclean, and I was just very upset by that. This is actually, by the way, I've just looked on the internet. It's Charisma's and David's 100th episode each. 100th appearance,
really?
As their character each. Yep, so both of them, this is their 100th Cordy and 100th Angel episode together in this episode. How does that make you feel?
All the hard eyes. Oh, my goodness. I can't handle that news. I can't.
They had to make it so they made it special for them. You know, they made it about them.
Yeah, it's all about them and their relationship and how much they mean to each other. Like, she's willing to go through this because she believes it helps him save the world. And he's willing to, like, possibly start an apocalypse to save her.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, that was so heartbreaking when she basically says, if I don't have my visions anymore, I can't help you.
I know.
Like, what good am I to you? And it's like, that's not why I need you. And she's like,
God.
You guys are so cute and so sweet.
And I feel like we've been talking about, like, you know, we've been projecting our own, like, you know, thoughts about Cordelia and Angel on this show for so long, and then to get an episode like this, it's just like a gift. It felt so right. I love it so much.
Called it since the dumpster.
I must say, rewatching the beginning, I had forgotten the dumpster. I'd forgotten, like, when we started, I'd forgotten that there was such a good chemistry at the dumpster. Like, I knew what was coming later, but I'd forgotten that that was there. And so that I, when that happened, I was like, oh, God, yes, yes, God.
All right, well, back to the plot. Cordelia's boils vision was about getting this key for some reason, and Angel has to beat up some, like, boil covered demon to get this key. And so they get the coin, they get the key, and are like, okay, now what? Then they decide, Fred comes up with this great idea to, like, trace back the energy of the visions to see if they can figure out where they're coming from. And it's like, hey, look, Fred is now contributing ideas to the group, which was delightful. She's out of her room.
I'm assuming she's going to be, like, the techie, because she's very smart,
techie,
right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you know how every group has, like, the techie, like, the girl on the computer?
Yeah, yeah, like,
that's
of course.
That's what I imagine she's going to be.
That was pretty much how she was on Person of Interest. So it's really...
Yeah. I think that's not the wildest assumption in the world to make.
I was very delighted to see her, like, after the previous episode when she's having trouble coming out of her room. Now she was, like, she came out and ate Chinese with them and then was at Cordelia's apartment and gives them an idea of a direction to go. Like, she's already really getting herself into the group, which is nice. So they bring in Lorne to do this, and Lorne ends up thrown across the room.
Lorne is just going to stop hanging out with them, I feel like.
He's just going to be like, guys, cut off. This is now too he's much. Getting attacked.
Poor guy.
We finally learn his name, and it's been nothing but a downhill trajectory since then.
Yeah, loses his head.
But he's having fun. He likes them.
His family abuses him. Like, yeah. So
they're also attractive. I feel like that's why he really likes them, because yeah, they're such a good-looking group.
It's true. All the way around. Nice look. Wesley could use a haircut this season, but...
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
You don't like the crazy hair that he's clearly been,
you know,
pulling
what?
At?
He's a rogue demon hunter, so...
He hung up that leather trench a long time ago. Or duster. I always get yelled at when I call it a trench. My God.
Whatever happened to his motorcycle?
You know he still rides it.
Yeah.
He brings it out.
It's in, like, a storage unit somewhere. And he, like, goes and, you know, takes care of it on the weekends.
Jesus.
But
it's in the,
anyway.
It's in the comics, guys. Yeah, Wesley, exactly. And the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
That's perfect. But Lorne, for his trouble getting thrown across the room, discovers that the visions are not coming from the powers that be. So the powers are not hurting Cordelia. It's their man-made visions, and they're local, and they're like, well, who's doing it? Gee, I wonder who'd like to get at Angel through the people that Angel cares about. And they go, aha, Wolfram and Hart. So Angel goes and interrupts Lila, who's playing golf on her computer.
Yes!
Oh my gosh.
I was very confused by that golf program. I was like, is this really happening?
She tries to seem, like, so badass, but, like, Lila, you can't come back from that. Yeah. Not from the golf.
Not from PC
computer golf.
Oh, my gosh.
And she's really bad at it.
Yeah.
So that was hilarious. So Angel is willing to give up the key and the coin, whatever they're being used for, in exchange for leaving Cordelia alone. Turns out that's not what Lila's after. She needs Angel to go into this hell dimension to rescue someone she says is being mistakenly imprisoned, which we find out is not true. This guy did is really horrible. But the only way to get Wolfram and Hart to leave Cordelia alone is for Angel to go break this guy out of hell. And he's like, God damn it, fine, I'll do it. So he does. So the key and the coin are used to create, like, the spinning top thing that opens a portal.
Sure. Why not?
Why not? And there was, like, this inserting thing that was very inappropriate to create the whole thing.
Must be a weird job to be like, what weird way can we make a magical ritual happen this time? Like, without it getting repetitive, you know, like... So
Once
strange.
Upon a Time doesn't have that problem. They just use the same thing over and over again.
Angel needed a magic bean.
He needed a magic bean, exactly.
But so Angel ends up taken to this guy, and there he meets the caretaker, Skip.
Oh my gosh.
Can we just take a moment to appreciate him? Skip is delightful.
So, fun fact. When I was watching this episode, my older stepbrother calls my father Skip. So it was like, I've never heard anybody else go by the name Skip before in my life. And so I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, that's what we call my dad. The whole time I'm watching it, I was like, this is great.
Good.
But Skip is delightful. He's like this really crazy looking... demon guy, but he's like very pleasant.
He's a nice dude.
Yeah. And he and Angel have this whole nice chat, like, you know, where are you from? Do you commute to work? Yeah, it's only like 20 minutes. It's not bad. It's just hilarious.
I need a new quote. I'll get it.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. You can still say that was your favorite.
I need a new quote, too. It's fine.
But Skip realizes that Angel is a good guy, so he's like, WTF, why are you going to fight me? He's like, it involves a girl. Long story.
Yeah.
I mean, can we just pause right there? Like, that as subtext is, like, yes, on paper it involves a girl. There is a woman that Angel needs to save. But that explanation as shorthand is so romantic. Like, it's not, it cannot be coded as anything else. You know, that is like, you know, oh, you know, was there a girl involved? Like, oh, you were doing it for love. That is what that means. Like, you know, no spoilers, just talking about the actual coding of this scene and this phrase is just amazing to me that it's so overt and I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very cute. And obviously he has to know that's what the guy would assume if he says it's about a girl.
Yeah. Yep. So Angel has to fight Skip and he feels bad about it and he ends up knocking Skip out. But he apologizes first.
I know, that was so funny. He's like, oh, God, sorry. Like,
are you okay? Sorry about this. And rescues this guy who'd been in a cage of fire and was on fire, but not screaming aloud because Skip couldn't stand his screaming. So he just made him quiet. And then once Skip was knocked out, the prison is no more. So Angel grudgingly brings this guy back. We have no idea really like what he did, or we just know it had to be really bad for him to be where he was. They trade him with Wolfram and Hart, and the brain guy removes the issue, Cordy's issues. And once they get the sign that that happened, they trade the guy. And then Angel kills the brain guy and threatens Lila.
And yes.
It's all kinds of amazing.
He's so great.
Did brain guy deserve to die? I mean, he seemed quite fine doing Lila's bidding. You're like, wow,
terrible.
Okay. I mean, he was just a paid contractor.
I like that part where they were like, he was like signing his like W-2 like form.
Taxes.
Yeah.
I like that. I like the bureaucracy of the demon scene, like of what it is in LA and how people are just like, yeah, whatever. I find that really fun.
I love that, too, because people were saying, like, how weird it would be to see Lauren walking down the street. And I was thinking, I was like, if I saw Lauren walking down the street, I probably would not think very much about it, like, here in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
I would just assume it was a person in costume.
I wouldn't think anything of it.
So, newbies especially, how did you feel about Angel killing the brain guy? Like, he killed somebody.
Is he human?
Is he a demon? What is the brain guy?
Yeah, that was kind of unclear.
It was a very dark turn for Angel. But I do think that he's different now. I mean, Buffy's dead, and so they came after his number one, and I mean, he's mad. He had to go to a hell dimension and get out a bad guy. So,
and I don't think that guy was probably completely innocent. I don't think if Angel thought that the brain guy was like, you know, just Joe Schmo from off the street, he would have killed him. I think he probably knew enough to know that getting rid of him would help them down the line.
It also prevents this from happening again. Because Lila was very clear that, oh yeah, well, you're under my control, stupid Lila.
Go back to your PC golf.
Yeah, she's in Lindsay's office now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's endless jobs there, and everyone gets to fight over that office, apparently.
Yeah. It's
like, oh, you did such a good job. You deserve this. And it's like, what? There are, like, 900 floors in this building, apparently, and everyone keeps moving up and up. Like, I feel like they have to keep building on top of this building because everyone keeps getting promoted to these fake job titles. Ugh. Wolfram Hart. So many questions, so little time.
All right, so Cordelia's good. Wolfram and Hart has somebody that's probably not good with them now. And then we return to Darla at the end of the episode. She's been trying to get rid of her baby, and it hasn't worked. So she goes to find this shaman, I think in Honduras, and trying to find out, like, what the heck the thing is, and basically he's like, can't help her, so she's like, I'm gonna go see my baby daddy, and dun, that's dun, it dun. Yeah. So now how
this should
we
be
feeling?
Interesting, considering that Angel swore he did not have sex with Darla. So this should be some fun times, and she shows up very crackers.
Yeah.
Oh, awkward.
I'm wondering, like, I mean, I know I said when we were talking about the last episode, like, no possible explanation for this will satisfy me. I think it's going to be dumb. But I am kind of secretly looking forward to them interacting and just seeing, like, Wes and Gunn and Cordelia's reactions to this reveal more so than Angel's. I think that'll be hilarious.
I think it'll be hilarious that Darla kind of needs something from him. Like, I don't know what she needs, but, like, she's going to him because she needs some help. And we haven't really seen the gang, like, interact with her when she isn't, like, trying to kill everyone. So I think it would be funny to see them because they have such a long history and obviously now they hate each other that it would be funny to see them.
Custody battle.
Custody. Oh my.
Yeah. Wesley's going to come out with
like a demon court.
Oh, that would be so great. That's the spinoff we've been waiting for.
A demon.
Oh, that would be so great.
I mean, I assume neither Darla nor Angel, like, wants some kind of demon spawn baby, so she's probably assuming Angel will help her, like, get rid of the thing.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, she'll be like, Wesley, can you look up in those fancy books of yours what to do when you're a vampire and pregnant? Like, what to expect when you're a vampire and expecting? Is that a volume that exists in Giles's library?
Imagine, I would love to see Giles finding out about this or whatever.
We need more crossovers, but not like the sad Buffy ones. Like, that was my biggest disappointment with the season finale. I really thought that we needed, like, a giant crossover. And I feel like maybe I'm spoiled by all the DC crossovers, but I want, like, a giant crossover.
Of, like, all of the characters. Imagine Anya and Xander, like, seeing, like, where's Cordy, Gunn, and Angel, like, doing.
Yes, I want
together.
Anya to hang out with Lorne. I feel like Anya would have a great time at the Demon Club.
Oh, she would.
I want Cordelia and Wesley to go back to Sunnydale and have, like, their redemption. Yes, Wesley needs to be redeemed in Giles' eyes. Giles still thinks that Wesley's a loser. And that makes me sad.
Well, he kind of is, but he's trying really hard.
He's the leader of stuff.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. He's a good leader.
He's
good competent.
Strategist.
He is.
Oh. I love Wesley.
Yeah, I would like them to cross over too, but I agree, not with, like, Buffy sadness or, oh my god, Buffy's back, because we know we're going to get that episode too. So yeah. like after it's been established.
No, like a fun back. Crossover.
Yeah, a fun crossover. Or like send the like all of Sunnydale to LA. I feel like they need to get out of Sunnydale just for like a hot second.
Yes.
And just see like, you know, life on the other side where like there are, you know, demon clubs and just what else is out there. I feel like they're so trapped in their little Sunnydale bubble. Need to get out, explore the world.
I mean, there's lots of rooms to stay at the hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, there's... And, like, you know...
They could take everyone. Like, no. Everyone.
They could bring yeah. Jonathan.
Yeah.
Bring over.
Jonathan?
I like Jonathan.
I do.
Bring over the guy, the bartender, and, like, you know... Dawn's friend who's, like, too short to be not evil or whatever it was, who lives across the road.
All right, I think we've lost the train of the episode.
We have.
So let's move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines.
Oh, God.
My favorite scene of this episode was the hilarious conversation between Angel and Skip, because mm-hmm. I just have so much love for Skip, like... Just so unexpected, and the whole thing is just played completely straight.
So and good.
I love everything about that whole thing. Do you commute? Yeah, like, it's only like 20 minutes. Like, the whole thing is so good. So, Angel and Skip, love it. Natalie, you...
This was meant to be my fave as well. Okay. I'm trying to rack my brains for some others. But I really loved this one. Like, I really, I just died. Like, I just like, oh God, yes, this is happening. And just the chillness of that was very amusing to me. So, yeah. And also him telling Lila to, you know, if he ever comes at Cordy, if she ever comes at him through Cordy again, you know, what he's going to do. So that was nice too.
I mean, honorable mention
to... Don't play that card twice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Honorable mention to computer golf. Ariana, your favorite scene?
Mine was the Breakfast Buddies end scene, because I just love that they, like, commune together over breakfast food all the time. So, yeah. But I also loved kind of the implications of that scene and the dark... undercurrent of it, because what Cordelia was saying is very true, and I'm not sure if this is a choice he would have made if Buffy wasn't dead. I don't know if he would have gone to such an extreme where he like didn't try to find a way around it. Lila told him to do something and he was like, okay, he did it, and you know, he's like, oh,
doing this again.
He's like, I'll have to worry about the consequences later. That was just like his first course of action. You know, he paid the ransom money. It's like, worry about the consequences later, which I think is really interesting in how you apply it to real life, because, you know, how he says it's not about winning. It's about what's at stake, and you are more important than winning. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what a relationship.
I know.
And Brittany, your favorite scene?
Mine was when they're all, like, visiting. They bring Lauren in to check out Cordelia's visions and see where they're coming from. And then, you know, Lauren, it's just, like, this little moment, but Lauren gets up and everyone is sort of standing towards, like, the door of Cordelia's room, and Angel just goes and sits next to her on the bed, and I'm like, oh my God, look at these two. Like, everyone else just understands that this moment is for them two to be close and be good friends, and it's adorable, and it made my heart soar.
It's a moment for Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to favorite lines. Oh, yeah, this is kind of a point to talk about, but first the line. When they realize that Angel's been beating up good guys, basically, because the visions are coming from Wolfram and Hart, and Angel says, so the Chinese guy and the Boyle guy, and Wesley says, we're also aligned with the forces of good. And Angel says, damn, so hard to tell these days. You know, they should wear lapel pins or something. So, A, adorable that Angel's, like, throwing in these little quips. Like, I love it. But that's also kind of going back to this whole thing of, you know, on Pylea, Angel was, for a while, was doing pretty well there because everything is black and white. And then, obviously, he goes into the black and things get ugly. But, you know, L.A., as we have seen and talked about quite a bit with the way he hit his rock bottom, it's all gray. There is no, like, black and white in anything that they're dealing with. The way it really is so much in Sunnydale, black and white, Los Angeles is pretty much all shades of gray. And Angel is very frustrated by that. And that's kind of just been a consistent thing with his character. Like, continually, it's hard to work in the shades of gray. And this was another issue where Angel ended up, like, beating up a bunch of good guys. The guy in people in Chinatown and the guy at the key shop and Skip and the Hell Dimension. They were all good guys. And he had to beat them up to do kind of this gray area thing of rescuing some really bad guy for Cordelia's sake. So it's kind of the ends justifies the main idea, but that's a very gray area thing. So that's continuing to be kind of a theme moving forward of living in the gray areas and operating in the gray areas of good and evil on this show.
It's such a like Slytherin move. I'm obsessed with it. like this idea that you have to like take care of your people. And if you take care of your people, like that's what matters. That's what's like, that'll make things okay. So,
I mean, we know for Angel that without them, he goes to bad places.
Yeah.
So he has to, he really needs to fight tooth and nail to protect his people, or he could end up in dark places like having sex with Darla and leading to Antichrist babies.
We can't have that.
So stay with your friends, Angel. Stay with your friends.
What if it's cute, though, with its little green horns?
It's not going to look like Lorne. That would be an interesting plot twist.
Remember when he turned into the demon? Wasn't he green? What did he look like? Oh. Green. I forgot. Yeah, he was green.
Pretty green.
Yeah.
Oh, Spike. I am bummed I did not get to be on that episode just for the one line when Cordelia was like, I love him, and he's like, you love me? Aww. No, dumbass.
Good. Yes.
So much good. Natalie, your favorite line?
Okay, so we kind of mentioned it, sorry, a bit, sorry, let me just paste it, which was basically when he says to her, like, it's not about winning, Cordelia, it's about what's at stake, and, like, in terms of making the choices, which was very indicative of the feelings to be had. I also liked after he fought with Skip out of a, you know, duty, and then afterwards he was like, oh, Skip, you okay? Like, after they had the fight. And he was like, good. And then, like, knocked him out. I felt like Skip might forgive him, you know, if it was called for.
It was for a girl. I mean, I feel like Skip is romantic.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Also, it's what's at stake. A little punny.
Please. Why?
Can't help it.
It's okay.
Ariana, your favorite line?
Mine was, we've already talked about it, but whatever. I'll say it again. When Cordelia was lying in bed and she was saying, I lose the visions, I won't be able to help you anymore. You wouldn't need me. That's not why I need you.
That's not why I need you.
Sobs.
This episode title is just going to be like gross sobbing. Because that's what half this episode is.
Actually, I think it's I came up with a better title.
I mean,
what? Please tell me what one.
Dad's home.
I
loved that. I loved that so much. Like, Dad's home from his business trip, and he brought us presents.
Okay. What I really loved about the, I mean, I've already said this, but what I really loved about these episodes is that, like, in, like, last season and the other seasons, he really did treat Cordelia like the little sister, but I do feel like now she's like mom. I feel like she's leveled up, and he's treating her like an equal now emotionally, and it's more like wifey.
Yeah.
Than little sister.
I imagine a lot of that comes from, like, how hard it was to win her back after he'd gone dark. Like, she was the last one to welcome him back because he hurt her the most by doing it because she's been with him the longest.
And she's always hard to win back, even when she went to Pylea and he went all the way over there to save her. And she was like, oh, hey, what's up?
Yeah. I don't really want to be.
I knew you were fighting this demon, and I'm like, this demon guy for me. But actually, I was kind of, like, rooting for him. Yeah.
She even, like, in the opening of the episode before this one, she was like, ah, oh, good times.
I miss Pylea.
Yeah.
Of course, they made you a princess. Like... Like, yeah.
So you were there for like a week. She was, and then they were saying, like, Fred was there for 5 years. And she's like, yeah, but.
And Brittany, your favorite line?
So I switched it up because my favorite line was the 20-minute commute. But I got another skip line in here. And it's when Angel points to the guy who's, like, on fire. And he's just like, oh, him? He's supposed to be here. Do you have any idea how monstrous a guy has to be before he gets sent to us? We are a very high-end institution. And I like that.
So this,
like,
guy, we're definitely going to see him again, I'm sure.
I hope so. Because...
Skip or the man in the fire?
Oh, so I hope Skip.
I hope we see Skip, but I'm guessing the man in the fire. Is gonna
the look he gave Angel at
terrible.
The end when, you know, he got Angel got him out was when they were putting him in the car was pretty loaded.
I mean, it'd be kind of bad if they didn't, like, follow up on the consequences of this.
Yeah, and plus, like, I liked the idea of, like, you know, as soon as Angel, we got this line after the line that where Skip is like, you're not supposed to be here, and you know, that just shows, like, he's not as monstrous as this guy. So he's, like, he's okay. He's not doing anything bad to send him to this high-end institution.
I mean, he's spent
his
time
in a demon inside
him.
Yeah.
But
he's got it under... He's got it in check.
He also served his time.
Yes, he did.
In a hell dimension after season two. So... Of Buffy. So... All right. Well, that wraps up our discussion of the first two episodes of Angel Season 3. If you guys have anything you want to comment on the episodes themselves or anything we had to say or any join our gross sobbing about Cordelia and Angel, you can do that several ways. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hyperbole.com. You can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can review us on iTunes, which is super helpful to help other people find the podcast. And we really like 5-star reviews. And if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will come back in season 3 with a shaggy hairstyle and looser morals.
Oh my gosh.
All our listener feedback this week was... Where are your guys' freaking episodes? And if you're listening to this now, they finally come out. So
yeah. One even went all up right. when we were recording this, guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How exciting.
So we had some delays on the editing front, and we apologize, but we are back on track now. So to wrap up, as usual, we are going to have our newbies predict what's coming up. So next week, as a reminder, we are doing the first two episodes of Buffy season 6 because they aired as a two-parter. And so for Ariana's answers and Brittany's brainstorms, we have Buffy 601 Bargaining Part 1 and 602 Bargaining Part 2. Take it away, guys.
Well, the first thing I want to ask Ariana is, do you think that there's going to be a time hop, or do you think that we're going to spend more time within those 3 months on the Buffy
end? I just assumed there was going to be a time hop. I assumed that she would be dead for 3 months, and then we come back to, like, when she's come back to life, which also might be, I mean, she would be decomposed. That's gross, guys.
I'm thinking, like, because you know how Dawn immediately following Joyce's death was like, all right, time to bring her back.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to try to bring her back? Or do you think, like, Buffy's, like, existing somewhere and is not actually dead? Like, you know, her body is in the ground, sure.
I mean,
like, is she still the Buffy Slayer in some, like, weird mythical type place? Or is there a new Slayer that was called? Because technically a new Slayer would have been called.
Oh, that would be cool. I would love to see a new Slayer. But I would say that she fell through the thing, except that we saw her body, so never mind. She's dead in the ground. I mean, I think Willow's going to try and bring her back because Willow is awful.
Mm.
And so she's a horrible person, so she's probably going to do some dark magic. And
oh, maybe we'll
back.
Finally get Dark
Willow.
She
has no business doing that.
What would you most want to see?
I would most want Buffy to be gone and for there to be a new Slayer, preferably named Kendra, who comes and is nicer to her friends.
There's something about the Slayer, like, you know, like, dies and the next person's called, but I can't remember. Yeah.
I don't think we're going to get one because she already technically died, and then that gave us Faith.
Yeah, the Slayer line
is still alive.
Faith is still around.
The Slayer line is with Faith. Yeah, the Slayer line is not with Buffy anymore. I don't know how much they've confirmed that. They'd certainly, I think when Faith came, they said, "Oh, you died, and Kendra was called." Then Kendra died, so Faith was called. So it's with the line is with Faith now, not with Buffy. Okay. However, that
forget everything I just said. They're gonna dig up Buffy.
I like it.
And
I
they're
going
to, like,
if we talked
put her
about
on display in Giles' kitchen or something. Because they
yeah.
have a very hard time letting things go. They're going to stuff her.
They're probably not dealing with it as healthily.
Oh, my
as...
God. They're going to stuff her.
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, Spike already has a Buffy bot. Why not just...
They have the Buffy bot.
Taxidermy Buffy? Oh, my God.
Stop. That's gross. Oh, my gosh.
Look, I wouldn't put it past these people. They really are attached to Buffy.
All right, so we'll find out how the show is going to go on with a dead Slayer who is dead and in the ground next week with Buffy, a Buffy two-parter. So until next time, my name is Caitlin.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Brittany.
See you next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.